It's time for the Dynamics AX podcast. I'm joined by Tommy Skerra and Lane Swenka. We're going to talk about what happened at AX GG Summit 2016 and at Ignite. We're also going to talk about their experiences with cloud deployment and Azure. And also, Lane is going to show us how to do automated deployment in Azure. Stay tuned. The Dynamics AX podcast, recorded October 17th, 2016. Automated deployments. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dynamics AX podcast. My name is Frederick, and joining me today is the always bald and beautiful Skerra. Hello, Tommy.
Hi.
Way up north.
Yep, still in way up north.
And also joining us today is Lane Swenka. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
You're a bit farther west than we are, I think.
A little bit.
Yeah. Where you at? Where's your abode?
I'm in the Iowa City, Iowa area. So the state of Iowa is about 4 hours west of Chicago. So okay. Chicago area. Not too cold here yet. No. A few more months.
You get sunlight. I don't have sunlight right now. It's dark. But then again, what? It's your local time is what? 1 p.m. or something like that?
Yeah, just about 2 p.m. So, yep.
Yeah, and maybe we should talk about where we can get in touch with you. Because Tommy, you're at Skerra on Twitter, and did you take to heart? We talked about last time.
Yeah, I didn't like that you mocked my long blog name, so I bought a domain. So it's instead of yet another Dynamics AX blog.blogspot.com, I bought yet another AX.com, which is basically just redirect, but it works. Nice. Yet another AX.com, which is kind of funny because now it's all the fuss with Dynamics 365. I probably should have bought yet another 365, but never mind. Carry on.
And Lane, you've also...
I was thinking about getting one of those tiny URLs or something for it, but axdeveloperconnection.it. So yet again, probably have to change, rebrand everything, get AX out of there.
You actually missed that. Now you actually get yet another Dynamics 365 for operations blog.blogspot.com.
Oh, it's available. Okay.
I think it is. So maybe you should go buy that. And Lane, you're at Swenka on Lane Swenka on Twitter.
Yep, that's me. So a little mix of personal and business. So you'll see a little bit of everything on there.
So let's just get into it then. We're just coming off two pretty big conferences, both the Ignite 2016 and the AXUG Summit 2016. And there was a lot of new stuff revealed. I guess they ran out of time in Ignite and they had to move some stuff over to the AXUG, where actually they did introduce the Dynamics 365 at the first time. And it looks like we now have to work closer with the CRM guys, and also Project Madeira looks to be a part of the new Dynamics 365. Have you tried anything like that before? Anyone played around with Madeira?
Yeah, did get that installed. Thought it was really interesting. I mean, it's got that Navision kind of online flavor. It kind of looks like AX7 as well. Obviously, it's stripped down from what we're used to with AX, but really interesting just seeing the integration of that with the Office 365 platform, and be interested to see the comparison of that with the operation suite with CRM fully integrated. So very anxious to get my hands on it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that they're calling Project Madeira now for financials and introduce that as financial, because AX also has a pretty well-developed financial suite, in my opinion, maybe even more elaborate when you consider multi-company scenarios and and I find it a bit confusing, and I'm afraid that somebody that wants to onboard with Dynamics 365 start off with financials and go with a financial solution, and then later on they start up with operations just to find that, well, the work they've done with financials might not be working that good with what they've already done, because, you know, the operation already has its own financials.
Yeah, it is interesting because it doesn't seem like there's a native integration just yet. If you were to have both financials and operations, like you said, operations includes a full ledger and everything. So I don't know what the plan is there, but be interested to see where they go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And also on the UG Summit, they talked about the offline / online on-prem story that they now have got. I think it's really interesting that they left behind Azure Stack and said, well, at least for now, because it's probably going to be later when they have the full on-prem story. But I think they went with a modular solution to which they showed off, where they're going to have different type of applications that are available offline, or at least different workloads or work processes that are going to be available offline. So retail is going to be the first one, and that's coming this November with the AX with a Dynamics 365 release. And then they're going to do warehouse and shop floor, which is coming early 2017, I think. And there's no information about what else they're doing right now, but I guess project management and other features like sales order management and purchasing and stuff will be available offline as well. And I also think it's interesting that the approach that they have now for multiple offline solutions, where it's much more robust than having everything in one single on-site data center. And if you have multiple locations and you have different types of functions that are performed, you can have one manufacturing site, you can have different types of project sites, and then a retail store and the warehouses all around, and you can have offline availability on site at these locations, which I think is a fantastic feature. Yeah. And I'm not sure how the Dynamics 365, you're working with MCA Connect.
Yep.
Which is, how many employees are you in?
Just shy. So from a development side, we have both an AX division and a CRM division. So I'm a little bit more familiar with the AX side of the shop, but we had around 80 developers last time I checked. So we have a pretty big presence there, and a big, equally as large functional crew. We just kind of tag team the projects between the functional side and the ERP side. So
yeah, we have some CRM, but I think maybe people should be the pure AX partners really have to pick up the CRM, I think, and get to
know. Yep.
Because if not, they at least they have to partner with some CRM partners, and maybe we'll see more merging of that happening now.
Yeah, that's my thoughts with 365. Exactly. I think it's a big opportunity for folks to, if they haven't picked up CRM before, to look into it. Same with Office 365, really. I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit more manageable for Dynamics partners to pick up, you know, the CRM suite or selling Office, for example, versus maybe the other way around, having the Office partners trying to pick up and starting to sell Dynamics ERP for the first time. That's going to be a pretty challenging, you know, I think for that segment of partner. But I do think this is a pretty big opportunity overall for Dynamics partners, just packaging all of these things together for the first time.
You, Tommy, you like Dynamics 365? Thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I can see that a lot of partners probably gonna struggle with getting on board with all of these products and just getting away with selling Dynamics AX, CRM, and even though they're not called that anymore, and also just making bundlings of all of these packages and solutions. As a CSP provider, so yeah, just like us, basically our partner as well. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about CSP. I maybe for some of those out there that haven't really heard much about CSP. I mean, cloud service provider allows you a deeper integration to sell cloud-based products, or?
I think there's a better price on even though I haven't worked too much with the pricing, I think we get a better cut on the prices compared to the enterprise agreements. And also, the as from the technical part, you get a different experience when you navigate your customers, because you log on to this portal where you will see your customers, all the customers you have onboarded. You'll be able to access their tenants, their Azure services through that portal, and their Office 365 administration. But normally, when you navigate the Azure portal, you can switch between your tenants. But when you go through this CSP portal, you sort of enter that Azure portal through the eyes of the customer. So it's kind of an interesting experience to access the customer's resources that way. But besides that, the CSP also, when you enter the Azure portal, you only see the Azure Resource Manager resources. You won't see any of the classic resources at all from the classical Azure. So, wow. Yeah. And for us who works with AX, with AX and AX 2012, you know that we still have a dependency when you deploy solutions from Lifecycle Services. You still have that dependency when you need to connect your certificate from that LCS portal and back to Azure using the classical portal. So there are some technical bits still going on, and hopefully they will be ironing out those soon enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. I saw a video from MS Dynamics World. There was a guy from SBS Group. It's on YouTube. What it actually means for VAR partners when Dynamics 365 is launched. And one of the things he said was become a CSP, because that's how it's going to be sold through that channel. Mm. So of course, transitioning your current revenue model from being that wholesale one-stop sale services company to more of a recurring revenue sales, that's mm-hmm. one. And extending the portfolio, as we talked earlier, with Office 365, Power BI, Cortana Analytics, IoT, CRM, and of course multiple ISV solutions. That's a given. And then he said you have to differentiate and do a good vertical. You have to have a nice vertical solution as well, and differentiate between the different partners, because I think a lot of partners take on any type of customer and don't focus. Like, we are very focused on manufacturing and project management. That's what we do. We don't go out and take any customer that we can find. So also that keeping that focus and being dedicated to a vertical is important, or multiple verticals. And also market and sell digitally. That's also one of the points that I'll put the link to that video in the comments so people can find them.
Yeah, but still, awesome. even with that focus, because you're talking about focus on manufacturing, there's a lot of technology that we need to try to understand and get our grips on with selling those vertical solutions. That stack it's a lot of information that needs to be consumed from us as partners. I know if you, Lane, have, because you've already gone live with one customers, but that's only the AX part, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. There's and just getting the uptake of a lot of ISV solutions. You know, I know AX7. There were plenty of CTPs, and there was a lot of opportunity to, you know, catch up your solutions. But you know, it is a huge shift from 2012 from a technical perspective. And so, you know, you kind of get trying to be on the bleeding edge on the, you know, front side of things, where you're trying to go live on a new system. Where some of the verticals are, you know, maybe the specialty ones are lagging behind a little bit. So it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah. But then again, some of these services provided by Microsoft are the bread and butter, like the Office and the Exchange and the SharePoint, and they are very mature in the cloud, and even CRM is also very mature in the cloud. So it's almost like click, 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 and you're done, mostly.
Yeah.
But that's also the case with AX7, because deploying that in Azure, that's a pretty sweet experience. It's not hard to do.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, environment spin up time has been reduced drastically. I mean, spinning up a dozen environments, you can do them all concurrently. And you know, in a matter of 3 to 4 hours, everything's about done. So it's pretty slick.
Yeah. So I haven't picked up too much about that on premise, because I didn't have time to watch the AXUG video myself. But did you guys see that video, or you even attended the AXUG this year, didn't you, Ellie? You were there, weren't you?
No, I wasn't this year.
You weren't.
So,
no, okay.
Unfortunately, I wanted to. Got married at that time, so.
Oh, took congratulations!
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, maybe the honeymoon down in Florida, but that didn't go over too well. So.
No.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
But I guess they announced some things about the on-prem modules, essentially. So.
Yeah.
Pretty interested about that.
Yeah. Did you check up on that, Frederick?
I didn't watch the whole thing. Only part was that it's already released or it's going to be pretty soon released for the retail store. And they did show at Summit, if you go to my blog, there's a screenshot of the retail offline stuff, which depicts the how it's going to work graphically, with some diagrams, which is far above me at your you guys probably look into it. But functionally, it's getting that offline functionality flawlessly on site through the ERP client. Yeah. So
yeah, it's only
piece by piece, so you're not gonna get the whole shebang locally installed. It's gonna be one by one. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, some of the features are only available in the cloud anyway. You can't have them on premise. I was kind of I wanted to ask you, Lane, because I know that you have worked with the Azure Stack or maybe not the Azure Stack, but the Azure Services, I'd say rather. For a long time, so and probably in combination with AX 2012 as well. Is there any of those services in Azure that you would emphasize, or some of them services you found to be very interesting in relation to even AX 2012 in implementations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the more that the ERP system starts to move towards Azure, whether you're deploying AX 2012 in Azure or you're using AX7, which is only on Azure at this point, having a good understanding of Azure and all of the services that are available is really to your benefit. I found just kind of over experience building a solution in Azure, if it's really costly, it's probably not architected cloud first with like a cloud first kind of mentality, because when you're on-prem, you build a giant box, right? You know, you want your AOS to have 56 gigs of RAM and all of these things. You want it to be huge so that you don't have to worry about expanding it in the future. But with cloud, you end up really building to the average, or even just kind of the minimum. And then you build into your architecture burstability and asynchronous processing. So I've really recommended a lot of folks to look at the Azure exams. Getting certified as an Azure solution architect, I think, was one of the best things that I did in the last couple of years, just to kind of help myself think more in terms of Azure and less traditional AX topology. The services I find myself using the most are the API apps, so the Azure App Service plans, whether that's Logic apps, API apps. Those are really handy wrappers, and now actually they're starting to have a lot of out-of-the-box connectors for things like AX7, which is really exciting, taking a lot of the extra work out of it. So wrapping services into API apps, Service Bus has been a big one as well, just to decouple, you know, different programs from AX. If you have any kind of integration, I start to try and sneak Service Bus into the solution when it's time to start talking about the solution, because there's always going to be downtime in different components of your architecture. And so I think every project that I've had thus far, we've used Azure Service Bus. So that's a pretty popular one as well.
Cool. Okay. Wow, that's a lot of information. So it's okay. So but what you're saying is that you do have situations where you would probably opt for having it on premise because you foresee a huge install. But okay, and then you're saying that if you can plan for burst, then you can put it in Azure anyway. Okay.
Yep, and that should be a more cost-effective solution if you're building out, you know, a cloud-based topology. You're going to want to have the bare minimum, but allow for, you know, VM scale sets and things like that to spin up only when you need them, really. So you end up having that burst ability for when you need that extra horsepower or extra processing. Say you have a queue and the queue is, you know, you're getting more orders than you can process at any one time. Well, then you throw on another virtual machine on the back end to help process for a short amount of time until, you know, maybe the volume goes down a little bit. But it's just, it's a different way of thinking in terms of architecture. And I found, you know, the overall monthly Azure bill is a really good indicator for, you know, have I taken an on-prem topology and put it in the cloud, or did I build, you know, a cloud topology, a cloud first, topology.
Okay. Interesting. So, another thing I'd like to ask you, do you prefer to deploy and set up these servers using lifecycle services, or do you prefer to do it yourself?
Good question. You know, really, lifecycle services has taken a lot of the hard work out of it. So not that I'm super lazy or anything, but LCS does make life really easy. I was experimenting a little bit with putting, you know, making an image out of the VHDs and spinning those up in the dev test labs. And that worked pretty well. But LCS has really made things pretty simple at this point. So for the most part, now I'm just using LCS.
It feels like they've been tweaking under the hood over the years, I'd say, making those deployments more efficient for each release. At least.
Continual improvement.
And I liked how they said the LCS, it's not a cradle to grave solution. It's a cradle to continuous life solution.
Yeah, that's right.
I also wanted to ask, because I know that you worked, we didn't talk too much about your history, but you did work as a customer before starting working with AX. Can you talk about that and then transition over to being part of a partner for AX?
Yeah, absolutely. My history with AX is an interesting one. Got into a company that was looking at replacing their legacy ERP system, which was Epicor Enterprise at the time. And so they were looking at this product called Dynamics AX, which I had not heard of, but my background was in web programming. So I was building websites and web services, primarily in PHP, but a little bit in .NET, and had dabbled in a software called OpenERP. So I had ERP on my resume at the time. And there's like, oh, you know, you're going to help us with some web services. And this was a company here in town called Integrated DNA Technologies. And they were one of the first companies on AX 2012 when it came out. So Some of the first things that I was doing in the AX space was working with the AIF, building custom services, exposing those into web APIs and things like that on-prem before I even knew how to put a menu item on a form. So it was kind of backwards. But from there, I worked in a couple of different customer industries, process manufacturing, discrete, and also the entertainment industry as well. I worked for a music company on the West Coast of the US. So Dynamics 4.0 to 2009 to 2012. I started with 2012 and then went backwards a little bit, which made me really appreciate 2012 and all the changes they made. So spent about 3 or 4 years in the customer space, and now I've been on the partner side for about 2 years at MCA Connect, which is a ERP gold partner for Microsoft. My role at MCA is a technical solution engineer, so I'm kind of the go-to technical resource for a given implementation. So as we all know, implementations can take anywhere from 6 months to a year to 2 years. So I'm pretty much a dedicated resource for a given implementation start to finish. And was just fortunate, as you mentioned, to be on a AX7 project where we just launched our first AX7 customer on the public cloud. So good times.
Yeah. Could you comment on how long it took you to go live with that customer on AX7?
We had a fairly limited scope, but really, I think it start to finish, it was 6 months.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it was a very aggressive timeline, but I think a lot of what helped us was a clear scope in the project and really, as we mentioned, just the ease at spinning up environments. LCS was huge, just getting things spun up early. We even, as part of that, went from RTW to update one. And by using extensions for all of the enhancements and customizations that we've been working on, we were able to upgrade the environments in about a day because there was really no overlayering conflict or anything like that. So the story behind extensions and reducing the cost of upgrades is definitely true from my perspective. So that was pretty awesome.
One of the things right. they talked about I think it was either at Ignite or at the AXUG Summit, was the onboarding process for getting people on the next platform. They showed actually a slide and said that all of these customers were the onboarding was in 60 to 90 days, which I found insane. That would have been... and they were pretty large customers with multiple locations and worldwide companies and stuff. So I feel that the process is much more clearer now. And I think Microsoft is more taking the reins on what we've done. Because as I probably said the last podcast as well, is that I feel that the partners kind of dropped the ball on AX 2012 and didn't put enough effort into understanding what Microsoft was doing. And maybe it was communicated a bit poorly. And to what are we going to do now, and how are we going to implement these, and what's the new features, and what is the okay, we're going to do seal compilations now, but what does that mean, and the whole change of the application, and looking at Microsoft now also launching a lot of stuff at the user group conference, even though it's also a partner user group user conference, but still launching it there, it sends a pretty clear signal that Microsoft wants to be closer to the customers. They've got LCS. They empower their customers now much more than they did before, giving them insights into what they should buy. They can try different applications without going through their partners and get recommendations for other partners through the Microsoft channels. And I think it's a pretty big change for a lot of partners. And if you don't follow through and get on the wagon right now, it's you're going to be left behind pretty soon, I think. So.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some certain things that Microsoft has kind of, there wasn't a traditional story for, like automated builds, for example. That was something that the community had, really stepped up to the plate and produced something that that was workable for different customers and different partners. But a lot of those stories now, Microsoft exactly is taking that up themselves. And like AX7, for example, has its own automated building story, and it works actually really well. So that takes that risk or that variable out of the implementation equation, and it really does come down to each partner bringing their competitive advantage of their implementation style or their management style into the project. And yeah, it does make it a little more challenging to stand out.
Yeah, but you've seen applications being installed without the role centers, like 2012. Okay, 2009, it's acceptable to not have role centers at least up and running at the bare minimum. But yep. When you come to a 2012 solution and there's no role centers, and we've taken over a couple of customers that didn't really have any idea what ACE 20 was, like a 3.0 installation. And did you come from an earlier version? No, it's a new implementation. Then.
Yeah.
Well, and with partners helping them along, and it's tough, and that gives also the tarnishes the reputation of the application. So I think Microsoft now says, like, okay, we gotta take the reins for a bit, and help you and guide the what we're actually delivering is much more than a lot of the partners is presenting to the customers.
Yep.
We got to be important. Yeah.
Elaine. So now that Microsoft they are really, really pushing, and they have for a long time, are pushing clouds. Cloud, cloud, cloud. That's all they talk about. Do you think we're going to see more AX implementations in the cloud compared to on-premise in the next couple of years, or are you going to have a huge chunk of on-premises implementation still? What do you think?
Good question, and I think everybody's probably asking that question. A lot of folks have been holding out, whether it's just a matter of the fact they already built out their own data center and don't want to throw all of that away, essentially, or they're just waiting to see what will happen. The cloud implementation that I worked on worked really well for this particular customer. They're a not-for-profit organization. They're trying to be super agile, and they want to maintain the latest versions of their technology every couple of years, and so if not even every year. And so moving towards SaaS and PaaS was a no-brainer for them. They had to have the cloud flavor. Even if there was an on-prem option at the time, they really wouldn't have taken it because they wanted to be on the latest and greatest. So I think, with the extension model, you can stay up to date pretty quickly if you want to put in all of that time and investment on-prem. And now, as we're seeing, they're starting to come out with some hybrid scenarios where, certain modules are getting taken out and made, kind of an offline version or an asynchronous version. Mm-hmm. Then again, the total cost is really what it comes down to for me. Do you have the infrastructure? Do you have the expertise? Because you're still going to have a lot of, it's never going to be a fully on-prem, right? It's going to be some mixture, some hybrid combination. So do you have the expertise in-house as the customer, and do they want to take on all of that internal cost, internal investment? Or do they just want to go to LCS and deploy? So it's a good question. I don't think I answered it, did I?
No, that's I think you gave a good answer. Because on the previous podcast, we had MVP Dick Wenning, and he said that he foresaw a hybrid. A lot of customers will do a hybrid solution where they would have some things in the cloud and some things will be on premise, and that's mm-hmm. fine. He even talked about splitting up the ERP that you could have on prem AX 2012 running something and AX 7 in the cloud running another thing, yep. Which is kind of interesting.
That was something that I saw that they presented years ago especially like in the project management scenario where they had needed an offline functionality because they were remote and stuff, and they had a something that did synchronize up. I thought maybe it was like in a really early start of master data management. I think that was probably the story behind it. You kind of picked up on that, that there was a story about partially available some AX solutions running individually and then syncing up to a bigger mothership, you might say. So
yeah,
it's interesting what they're doing right now. It's going to be it's going to be a different story in a couple of years at least, I think, for all partners.
Have you played anything with the master data management framework at all, Lane?
You know, I haven't. I was looking into it, and yeah, it looks really interesting. I think one thing that I saw though was the most frequent you could synchronize was every hour, I think, which might be taking it out of my use case. But yeah, that does look really interesting, especially, you know, for global deployments. This was an AX 2012 customer looking at, you know, we have installations, local installations throughout the globe, and how do we maintain our customer list so that we're talking apples to apples everywhere. And I think that makes a lot of sense using something like, you know, MDM, or having some kind of a master-slave instance where one of them maintains the true list and everybody else receives, you know, updates. But haven't used it myself.
So that's going to be replaced now by the common data model, right? So the common data model is going to be beneath it all and at the heart. And we're lucky because the common data model is also developed by the AX team. So so we're very, very lucky to be on the AX side of it.
I think
it's interesting that they're the one actually creating this this central heart of it all. So it makes it easier.
They are they are really working and pushing innovative services and tools for around the Dynamics ERP solution.
But it's pretty young at heart right now, and it bears resemblance of a system that is mainly in the implementation phase, because I was trying to do a Power BI report on time and attendance, which is one of my core areas, I think, and there's not much stuff to report on transactional levels, actually. Very, very little, even from sales and stuff. It's quite limiting. Manufacturing wise, there's nothing about manufacturing that you can replicate out to start reporting on yet. But that's also one of the stuff, one of the things they mentioned at Ignite, that that's one of the core things that they have. They have 1,800 entities right now, which is insane if you look at how many is actually missing. So it's gonna be many thousands, tens of thousands of entities, and I think that one of the issues is that we have to now get familiar with the entities and how they are and what they work. We're not working with the data model anymore. There's pros and cons using both. I think we're gonna talk maybe next. I think next podcast is with Joel Lichty, which is working a lot with Power BI, and maybe he can get more into it. So
awesome.
Yeah. Should we talk about automated deployments? Right, Lane. We wanted you to show us what you've seen and what you've done and what you've experienced with automated deployments in AX, because we know that this is a topic that you excel on. So show us some juicy stuff.
Okay, yeah, sure. This is definitely one of my favorite topics. So With obviously with AX7, Microsoft has included an automated building story into the whole solution. So as soon as you stand up a build environment through LCS, it tries to automatically register itself in Visual Studio Team Services. So this is just the online version of TFS for those who aren't super familiar with it. It really has been pretty outstanding from a project management utility. I mean, like I mentioned before, as the technical solution engineer on a given AX implementation, this is kind of where I live to see, you know, the progress of our development, you know, who's failing the builds. It's most likely me because I have no idea what I'm doing. And also, you know, just what all is going on in terms of not only builds and outstanding work, but also deployment status. So one thing that isn't included with AX7 is an automated deployment story. There's a new feature in LCS now where you can manually upload a code package and pick an environment to deploy it to, and it will take the environment down and essentially run the runbook to install the deployable package. So that's a new feature in LCS as of the last couple of months at this point. And that is a requirement to get that package into production. So, you know, I think most partners would say that you have to have some kind of customer testing and then some sign off before putting code, new code especially, into a production environment. Microsoft has actually built that into LCS now. So for a given deployable package, you cannot deploy that to production until you've first deployed it to a testing environment and somebody's gone in there and put in there. You know, their sign off, their initials or something. So, but that's still arguably what I would say, not an automated deployment story. It's a pretty manual step. And I think arguably, you know, the production deployment process should be a little bit manual. You don't want to necessarily take down production at a certain time every night and load new code. You want that to go through the right channels and the right hoops to get that, that schedule. But, you likely have a lot of pre-production environments. You know, we typically see, you know, one to many dev environments, typically a test environment of some kind. Sometimes, you know, it's called a QA environment. And then usually after the test environment, we have something called staging, which is, you know, a final resting place for code prior to production. So what I'd like to maybe go over is just a little bit on the build process. And I know a lot of this has been covered by, you know, folks like Joris and a lot of different sessions. There's great things on the Dynamics Learning Portal as well. But just wanted to go over this because it feeds into the release.
So could I ask you, how difficult is it to onboard this, to get started with this, if you haven't set it up at all?
Actually, it's fairly easy. So let me click on this. I've got a couple of different definitions here, but this one is created automatically for you by LCS. So there are some scripts that are deployed onto a build environment. So if you're deploying through LCS a build topology, there are some additional scripts that run on that virtual machine when it turns online. One of those scripts actually creates this build definition in your related team services project. So just going to load into this here so we can see the specifics. But each build definition is really just a series of steps with optional parameters. So all of this that you see here, for the most part, is created automatically for you by the standing up of the build machine. We've got a couple of additional scripts that we've added here ourselves, but for the most part, this is pretty plug and play. As soon as it's on here, I believe even the trigger for this build definition is set to run every night at 5 p.m. local time. So We've changed our settings here, and we're building different branches. One thing that's really, really nice is in compared to AX 2012, where we had all of the issues of element IDs. I don't know, Tommy, if you've ever run into element ID issues.
Multiple times.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah, me too. That has essentially, for the most part, gone away. So with one build machine, we are able to build multiple branches in the same project. It really has no impact on the IDs in that system because there really aren't IDs like that anymore in the code files themselves. There's some information in the database, but the way that the database synchronization engine runs now, it really just looks to see, does that object already exist? And if it does, it just uses that ID. So we've got one build agent, and we've got one build virtual machine, but we're building for multiple different branches all the time. So that has been pretty handy. Maybe just to jump into our topology here a little bit to give some background on what I'm about to show.
But just to reiterate, you said that you've deployed the build topology from LCS.
That's right. Yep. So the build environment and topology is deployed from LCS, and that creates not only the virtual machine where the build environment lives, but also creates the build definition that we just saw in VSTS. So let me maybe just look at a hierarchy here.
I think we're just seeing a black screen here.
Ah, pardon me. I'm not sharing everything. That's okay. Actually, you know what? We can skip that. Live demos, good times. So so we've got different definitions here. Essentially, the main two that I wanted to show here are a trunk and a production release. So the idea for us is that trunk is our highest level branch, and this is where, you know, different developers are working on different customizations. And this is the first time they're getting merged together into the same branch. And so we definitely want to build that. So, you know, not only did customization one work well with developer A, and customization two worked well with developer B, but we want to make sure that they compile together in the same environment. So this is our first pass, and this produces a deployable package. So let me go to our builds here, build history, and I can click into any one of these and see, you know, associated work items. I can see, you know, what customizations was this against, and maybe this was just an automated build, so there was no work item that kicked it off. But for each one of these, you can go into your artifacts and into the packages folder, and this is where you're going to have your deployable package when the build is done. This is what you would typically download manually to your machine and then re-upload into LCS asset library. And this is what you would deploy to production. For example, this is what you wanted to deploy. Now these code packages are, you know, depending on if you've had to overlayer the application suite, that instantly makes the package around 400 megabytes. So it's it takes a little bit of time. Definitely do that process on an Azure virtual machine if you can. But otherwise, you know, if you just have an extension package, these can be fairly small and fairly lightweight. So that's where they reside as soon as your build is complete. Now we build these different branches every night, and the packages need to go to different environments. And that's where release management comes in. And this is under the release tab here in VSTS. And each definition that you have can potentially be in one or many different release definitions. So every time you have a successful build, that can automatically trigger the release of that build to different environments, like your test environment or a QA environment, or a gold environment, or whatever the, you know, naming conventions might be, on an automated basis. So just wanted to walk through what that might look like. So go ahead and jump here into one of these definitions, this part is not set up for you automatically. And I owe a good blog post on the exact steps, but basically using PowerShell remoting, we are able to, from our build machine, remotely log into our target machine and execute the runbook, which is the process to manually apply a code package to an environment. This does the exact same thing that you would do manually, just in an automated fashion. So, and you can have multiple different environments here. So we can have a test environment, we can have a gold environment, and they can run on different deployment schedules. So you can keep your test environment with the latest code every night if you'd like to, and maybe your gold environment or something like that every weekend. You know, it's really up to you at that point. But it's really easy to come in here and create one of these. You just basically say new release definition. You tell it what build is your artifact source. So I'm basically saying this particular build definition is where I'm going to get my package from. And as soon as it, as soon as a new package is available, I want to kick off a build, or maybe I want to do it on some arbitrary schedule. Each environment, this has actually helped in some cases for our customers where they have really strict audit requirements as well, segregation of duties, where, you know, the developer who's developing the code cannot be the build manager who merged the code into the trunk, kicked off the build, and maybe even the build manager cannot be the same person who deploys the code or signs off on a deployment. In here, you know, you can have approvals and workflow. You can say specific users from the project, pre and post deployment. You can have different people signing off on either the code or the health of the environment after deployment, both. It really just makes, you know, this whole process very easy so that you know, it's not just the IT folks, I guess, doing these deployments. It can be something that's managed by the customer, really. They can have full control on, you know, when new code that's successfully built is actually going to be deployed or not. That's essentially the process. Kicking one of these off. It's kind of cool. So
if I understood, now you can actually have a development environment, or several development environments, that goes up to a staging environment that's compiled. And if that is successful, it automatically goes out to your pre-production environments, like your testing and your training environments and stuff.
Exactly. Exactly what we've done. And, you know, from a auditing and segregation of duties standpoint, it automates the process, so you no longer have, you know, a human error prone process. It's really easy to show, you know, who clicked the button. You know, it logs essentially everything. VSTS is very good about logging things, so the traceability is there. And frankly, just from a from a technical engineer standpoint, there are so many more interesting things that I can be doing instead of builds and deployments. So having this thing automated is just really, really handy, and a huge time saver as well.
I've actually heard some partners being irritated that Microsoft is making it almost too easy to handle the environments now, introducing a lot more complexities, but still making it. As you said, even customers can do it, and I think they are a bit afraid that they'll lose their bread and butter, but still, is that really what you want to do? Look at compiling errors and doing compiling and copying files and pulling up and down environments and is that?
I completely agree.
That's what people made money off of before, like a good lot of money, I think, in the ADX 2012 environments, this is something that tarnishes the reputation of the product, but it's good to see that this is getting really focused and the story that you tell about AX being you have to have a staging environment and you're released to production. But that same kind of sequential process, which should probably be done in AX2012 as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, that comes down to just the, you know, the methodology. I would imagine, you know, most partners are implementing some kind of UAT and sign off before production. But now, you know, it's really a technical requirement. You can't do it in LCS until it's been deployed there and signed off by somebody with the customer's email address. So, I mean, they're really making it more of a fact of life now, instead of maybe more of an optional thing that could be skipped here and there. So,
yeah, it's no longer a best practice. It's just practice.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, this is really the process, the trick behind all of this. And I don't know if I mentioned it yet or not, but, you know, all of these environments are potentially in different subscriptions. You know, maybe some of your test environments are in one subscription, maybe they're in another. You know, if you're lucky, they're all on the same one, on the same virtual net. But even some of the environments in LCS in a implementation project are part of your AX7 subscription with Microsoft. And so those environments are actually hosted in Microsoft's internal subscription. So there's no, you know, there's not an easy way to connect all of these environments together, even with something like PowerShell remoting. And you're noticing here, I've got a local IP address. And really the secret sauce, I guess, behind this approach is using an Azure virtual network and just downloading the point to site client. It's just a Windows program that you can download on every environment, double click it, and it connects back to Azure as a virtual network. So that's really kind of been the trick for us to get this to work, so that we can deploy, you know, every night to all kinds of different environments on set schedules, without having to manually go around and download packages and install them. So this is, I guess, the only gotcha that we ran into. So, and I'll definitely get a post out there, but just kicking off the deployment here. I suppose I should tell everybody the test environment's going down. I'm kidding. and, you know, really it logs into the console of the build machine that's performing it. So you can see, I click over to the logs here, it's already on this step here where it's downloading the artifacts from VSTS onto the target machine. So,
is this the same kind of story if you're doing patches and KV stuff that you upload?
That's exactly right. Yep. So for us, what we've been doing with AX7 is checking in hot fixes, because those are something that that you can check right in. Even though it's a syslayer object, you can still check it into TFS and promote that around to all of your environments just with a couple of clicks in TFS. So we've been evaluating hot fixes that are out there just on a semi-regular basis, I guess. If there's an issue that we know of, we definitely go searching for a hot fix. But otherwise, we just kind of scan for things that seem like general performance improvements, things that we want to evaluate, check those into a developer environment, evaluate things there first to make sure it plays nicely with everything that we've been developing, and then start to promote that up through our trunk branch and into a release branch, which automatically through this process gets deployed to our pre-production, more public facing environments for the customer. So they know when a hotfix is deployed via email, because this thing, this process sends out maybe more emails than you might like, but it's definitely not a black box. So that is kind of how we've been handling it. It's very much like promoting any other customization that we work on. So
does hotfixes also has to be signed off by the customer before it goes into the production environments?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Yep, exactly.
It's the story about Microsoft empowering the customers to be more involved with the application, and they have to be more on board. You can't go in and just we need an ERP system, and then just sit back and wait to the partner to do everything. But yeah. Yep. They still would have an email address.
But I imagine that a lot of customers, you'll still need to have those geeks like Lane and us who finds it interesting enough to dig into these services and how they work and how you configure them and set them up. It's not because I've been working with the Visual Studio Visual Studio Online, and you have to understand how things are dependent on each other, how these services operate. And like you said, just that you needed to first connect locally before you can connect to the Azure subscription online. If you didn't know the dependencies, you wouldn't know how to do that or even consider it. But it's a nice little trick you got there. I'm looking forward to your blog post.
Yeah, I'll definitely throw it out there, and you know, if anybody finds holes in it or makes it better, I'm all for just making our lives easier. So, see what feedback we get.
I also wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that you've gone through the RTM and the update one, and now the latest one is the update two. I've seen there has been some issues with the releases, and they've fixed bugs on it. Can you talk about that, what you've discovered so far and going through the versions, also with the extensions and the way you've extended the application code?
Absolutely. You know, really, extensions, just to maybe take that one first, it's a different way of thinking. And I think a lot of folks have been saying it, but until you really dig into it, it's a different way of doing your development. And it's taken folks a little bit of time, myself included, just to really start extension first, instead of, you know, going in and overlayering and then thinking, oh, maybe later we can turn this into an extension. But really, for this project, our kind of internal goal was, let's just do this all 100% on extensions. And we did. It wasn't easy, but throughout the different versions, they've given us more options for extension. You know, enums and things. Initially, you couldn't, and you still can't extend every enumeration. But for the most part, you can find a delegate. There's a lot more delegates now than there ever used to be. So there's a lot more events that are just in the system that you can hook onto. You just have to spend a little bit of extra time looking for them. But it is doable at the end of the day. So I think the trick has been finding ISVs that are taking that same approach as well. You know, most of the ISVs that we've worked with thus far have overlayered, I think, just for sake of time. And I don't blame them, because it is very time consuming to not just overlayer like we had been in 2012. So I think with time, more and more ISV solutions are going to be extensions. And so those should just be more plug and play. But when you're looking at AX7 and you're looking at installing a bunch of, you know, add-on solutions, making sure that those are going to have a story for extension at some point is going to be good, because that will just lower the upgrade cost in the future. Upgrading was fairly simple. We just the easiest way is to delete all of your virtual machines and redeploy in LCS. That's the quickest way to get it done. That doesn't necessarily save your data sets, though. So if you are trying to maintain a bunch of transactions in a test system, for example, you need to, you know, preserve the database, extract it, upgrade the environment, load the database back in, and run a sync and see what happens. Usually, from RTW to update one, there weren't any major problems, but that's not to say that there won't be to update two. So, but really, the kind of the story for the lower level environments, dev environments, even test environments, has been, you know, go ahead and delete those and redeploy them, and you know, load your data migration or your master entities back in, and kick off new transactions at that point. So. And obviously production is handled by Microsoft, so they take all the heavy lifting of maintaining your data in production.
And you can always order a backup of your live system to wherever, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's actually something that was added to LCS a few months ago as well, I think. So at any point, you can request a live copy of your production Azure SQL environment to another Azure SQL environment. So it has to be Azure SQL to Azure SQL. Converting that back down to a SQL backup file is a pretty lengthy process. I think there's, you know, somewhere of like 30 steps to convert the file. So probably deserves a blog post of its own as well at some point. But all of the pre-production, like the staging environments, the UAT environments, those are all Azure SQL environments as well. So those can get restored to pretty quickly, especially if that's your, you know, staging pre-prod, where you're loading your latest code prior to a downtime in production, you can make sure that you've got the latest data there to test things out. So that's a pretty awesome story at this point.
So we're about out of time right now. Thank you very much, Lane, for joining us. And
Thank you.
Thank you very much, as always. Where can we get a hold of you, Lane, if we need to find your what you write about?
Yep, axdeveloperconnection.it or at Lane Swenko on Twitter.
Yeah. And I'm at axfrederick on Twitter. And you can find my tips and tricks at dynxtips.com. That's dynxtips.com. And Tommy, what about you?
Yeah. So Skaue, however you pronounce that, S-K-A-U-E. That's my Twitter handle. And my domain is currently yet another dynamicsax.com, which will redirect you to yet another dynamicsax blog.
.blogspot.com. So it's yet another ax.com.
Yet another ax blog. Yeah.
Yet another ax blog.
You see how that's going to cause a lot of confusion. Yet another ax. Yet another ax. Think about it. You want yet another ax.com.
I'll try it right now.
I'm loading it up as we speak.
Yes.
It works.
Yeah,
it's going to stick. It's going to stick now for everybody. Yet another AX.
Yet another AX.
Exactly.
We talk a lot about you URLs on these shows, Tommy. we do. So, yeah. But thank you very much, guys. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, I think, with Joe Licht, if that's at least the plan. And we hope that'll stick. So have a... Have a very happy Halloween, Lane.
Yes, you guys too.
Yeah. And I'm just going to show this at the end because I was prepared to have some swag here. And I ended up with this showing just the logos. You can't see it in the back here, but it just shows that says MCA Connect and this the Dynamics logo.
Awesome.
But check this out.
Oh. Oh, no.
It broke.
You broke it.
Christmas, I'm bringing swag. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great one. Bye.
Thanks, guys.